The first week of December, we always go to our friend's tree farm and cut a Christmas tree, usually a Fraser fir. When my son John was six, we walked into a field of blanketed trees. There had been a major snow the day before, and it looked like we were walking into a Christmas card. And as we went up and down the rows, I said, "This year we're going to find the perfect Christmas tree." To which my six-year-old son, in wisdom far beyond his years, said, "There is nothing that is perfect in nature, Dad, but there's a lot of beauty." And I stopped in my tracks and I said, "Where did you learn that?" He said, "I don't know. I just know." And he hasn't said a thing that can top it in the last 24 years. You know, someone said that God does not create in straight lines. Oh, there are exceptions to every rule, of course, but nature's design doesn't conform to all of our lines and angles that we impose upon it. Cells are not square. Flower petals are not triangular, or if you want a nice word, octagonal. Birds do not migrate in perfectly straight patterns. Rivers run straight to the seas, they say, but not before they loop and bend along contoured terrains. Tree branches, coastlines, they're jagged. They are not straight. You see, Earth's topography is contoured. All kinds of contours from the very bottom of the ocean, miles below the surface, and 32,000 feet above the surface to Mount Everest. You know, from our perspective, the Earth seems flat. Go to the ocean and look out onto the horizon, and it's flat. But from space, we see that the world is a sphere. Things move in arcs and circles. Relationships are complex and cyclical. Beauty is in the eye of the beholder, and from the perspective of nature, God's artistry is irregular. Now, let me switch topics just a little bit. If to make Sue special, I looked lovingly into her eyes and said, "Sue, you are so symmetrical." She would say, "What?" But if I looked into her eyes and I said, "You are so beautiful," she would ask, "Okay, what do you want?" They did an interesting experiment with a diverse group of people from 13 countries. They were shown pictures of people with symmetrical and asymmetrical faces. Those where the left and the right side are the same, and those where the left and the right are different. And they were to identify those faces that were most pleasing. And what's more, they conducted the same experiment with babies to see which faces they would respond to more often than not. And guess what? It was the symmetrical faces that did it. Not asymmetrical, like, well, here's some examples. That is not a symmetrical face. That is not a pleasing symmetrical face. Number three, please. That, you know who that is, don't you? Rafael Nadal, the tennis player. I don't know what he's doing, but that is not pleasing and that is not symmetrical. And finally, that is not at all symmetrical. We know what's pleasing and what is not. There was a physicist named Frank Wilczek who said, there is a wonderful overlap in the universe between beauty and physics. And he points to the circle. He said the circle is a shape that you see throughout the universe. Planets, moons, stars, galaxies, constellations. They are all circular. There's a fixed point, and you rotate the circle around the fixed point, and it's always a circle. Nothing changes about it. You can take an equilateral triangle, and you can have the center point, and you can turn it just a little bit, and the shape changes. But if you rotate it 120 degrees, it's a triangle again. And another 120 degrees, it's a triangle again. It remains a triangle as long as that center point is fixed. Last Sunday, we sang an old hymn. For those of you who like old hymns, went back to 1847, called Abide With Me. And one of the verses says, change and decay in all around I see. O thou who changest not, abide with me. We all move around a circle, this circle of life, and as we go around it, we face change and challenges. And through it all, there is that firm center, which is God. It is fixed. And in this world of perpetual change, God changes not. God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. God is the anchor at the center. And in the 23rd Psalm, the center is a shepherd, one who makes us do things, one who makes us lie down, who leads us, who feeds us, who restores us, who walks with us, who provides for us, Tom and Betty, who anoints us. In the chancel of my home congregation, there was a larger than life painting of Jesus the shepherd. I mean, it filled half of the chancel. In the foreground is Jesus with this serene face, and he's holding a lamb in his right arm. You look at the leg, and it's been bandaged. Behind him, there is a flock of sheep. They're following a path along a flowing stream. And you notice the whole painting is kind of in a shade because it's a very verdant scene with grass and green trees and what seems to be a forest all around them. I saw that painting every Sunday when I was growing up. The artist's name was Medford Near. He was a Church of the Brethren pastor and a very accomplished artist. Casey's giving me a little grin. He knows where I'm going with this. And Medford Near did paintings and murals in Church of the Brethren congregations through the Midwest, but primarily in Ohio and Indiana. But do any of you know what Medford Near's biggest project was? Something you have seen. The murals at Camp Mack, painted by Medford Near, which chronicle the history of the Church of the Brethren. That painting has never lost its appeal for me. My home church is no more. Another church is meeting there. And I've often wondered what became of the painting. But where it is and what happened doesn't really matter for me because, you see, that image has been branded into my brain. I think about that painting and I remember that the shepherd is ours and we are his. I remember that his twins, little old Goodness and Mercy, follow us all the days of our lives from the womb to the tomb, and our lives will not spin out of control. no matter how frantic and how insane they may be, they will not fly off by centrifugal force as long as they are anchored to a center. Our lives will not ever be out of control as long as the shepherd is at the center. Now, I know that some of you pray the 23rd Psalm. Some of you, as a part of your devotions, recite it. That's something that Gladys was able to do right along with the Lord's Prayer over these past 7 weeks. A lot of us, however, you know, we don't think about it that much until we go to a funeral. At funerals, 12 out of 10 pastors read the 23rd Psalm. Did you catch that little cute one? That means they do it a lot. I don't think I've ever been to a funeral at which the 23rd Psalm was not read. But when we do it only in that context, we're missing something, because it isn't just the period at the end of a sentence that was somebody's life. It's a promise of God's care in every moment and in every experience as we move our way through the march of the years around the circle of life. In a little bit, we will sing, "Great is thy faithfulness. O God, my our Father, there is no shadow of turning with thee. Thou changest not. Thy compassions, they fail not. As thou hast been, thou forever wilt be." Unfortunately, we lose touch of that fact. We lose touch of the changeless God because we live in a world of perpetual change. We're high tech, you know. We text and tweet and Twitter. We Facebook. We FaceTime. We Skype. We're just a smartphone tone away from another message that may or may not relay something that is worth anything at all. So many people spend so many times doing this, texting one another, that they have forgotten what a conversation is, of give and take, of looking into another person's eyes and not having letters pass between you, but meaning pass between you. Some of you have asked, "Am I on Facebook yet?" My answer is no, and I never will be, not because I'm a Scrooge. It's just at the end of a day, and especially at the end of a hard day, I don't want to rehash it. I don't want to have to sit down and type on a keyboard to who knows how many people of what a bad day I've had so they can text back with a chain of comments. "Oh, bummer, Bibby, I had one too. I almost quit." And somebody else throws in from somewhere, "Did you hear about Tom?" "Tom who?" "You know, Tom with Tammy. You know, the one who takes pictures of his lunch and sends it out every day." "Mr. Bibby, you wouldn't know a bad day if it bit you on the nose. Get over it." Another link comes from somewhere. "Stan, the account is due on my desk. Will that account be on my desk tomorrow morning? And this is not a question. Has anybody heard that Mindy and Mitch broke it off? About time. Better now than later. He was a jerk. Anyone know where I can get a replacement blade for my Ninja? I can't start a day without a breakfast smoothie." Bibby thinks he's had it bad. Tell him to get a real job. Now, I don't have time for that. I don't want people commenting on every little aspect of the days of my life. So let me tell you what I do, at least what I do at this time of year. When I end my day, I go down Till Road where there's this depression, and if there's no traffic coming either way, I put on the brakes and I stop and I roll down my windows beside the still waters. And this is what I listen to as long as I can. It's coming. Mm-hmm. And I'll sit there and I'll sit there and listen to the chorus as long as I possibly can. And when I leave, somehow the day is just a little better. Have you all heard peepers yet this spring? Go down Till Road. I'm telling you, it's the Handel's Messiah of spring peepers. Beside the still waters in a wetland that the developers haven't managed to destroy yet. Still waters, green pastures. He feeds us. He leads us. He anoints us. He protects us. He guides us. You need to know that you are causing a stir at the hospice hospital, because the nurses there have been moved by how many of you have come to visit and outpour your love for Ariel. One of them commented that she has never seen a church care for anyone as much as we have cared for Ariel. And if one of them asked me why, I would say, well, it's a long story. See, we've been through an awful lot together. But I guess the best I could tell you as to why we do things like that, well, when one of our own encounters misfortune or sickness or heartbreak or the shadow of death in the march around the circle of life, we are there to tell one another that we are centered in the center. We laugh with those who laugh. We cry with those who cry. And when they enter the dark valley of depression and distress and despair and the shadow of death, we stick to them like gorilla glue. We tell them what the shepherd promised us. We tell them, fear no evil, for I am with you. Why do we do it? Well, it's a long story. But it's a long story in another sense. It's around 3,500 years old. You see, there's this shepherd. It's a really good one who keeps a close eye on his children. He knows their needs. He knows what frightens them. He knows how to calm them. He knows when to feed them. He knows when the predators are lurking. He knows when one gets lost. And he won't give up looking till that one is found and returned to the fold. That's the kind of shepherd that anchors our life. I'm going to shut up soon. But I need to tell you first that there's something in the 23rd Psalm that I have never noticed until recently. And that is that the shepherd feeds us twice. That's right. At the beginning, in the green grass, beside the still waters, we are fed. And then he feeds us a second time, this time in the presence of our enemies. And despite their best efforts at undoing us, we sit there and feast. Our cup overflows. And I know you say, leave it to me to find a connection with food. But I'm not the only one who has ever observed this. David Brazil is a theologian, a pastor, and a gourmet chef. And I've put this quote at the head of your bulletin. I just love it. He says, when things are a bit tense, when life is not going at its best, when the potential for disaster is just around the corner, when your enemies are all around you, that's when God lays out a red checkered picnic cloth and says, ooh, this is a nice place. Let's hang out together for a while. Just you and me. We not only get fed twice, but today we get fed three times. It's not much, this little piece of bread. I don't know what kind it is today. Just a little sip of grape juice. That's it. If you got hunger pangs, it's not going to be enough to alleviate them. It won't be a substitute for Sunday dinner. Nevertheless, it is real food. It is food indeed that Jesus Christ has given us to strengthen us as we walk round and round and round the circle point, round the circle with the point that changes not.